Welcome to this week's episode of Work in Programming. I'm Matthew Weeks, and I'm here with Mike Mall, the founder and director of Social Media House and the host of the, is it not Content Sessions anymore?
No, I switched it. It's called the Market Me Podcast.
The Market Me Podcast.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming on. My first ever like podcast interview was actually on Mike's podcast, where he kind of broke down and helped me figure out how I might go about getting started with my podcast. And it was like a really awesome opportunity. And I love the way that you think about marketing and just like the way you think about like business and like just thinking of through problems. It's really creative. So I thought that you'd be a great person to talk to right now, especially with, you know, everything that's going on. A lot of people are potentially, you know, worried about this whole COVID-19 thing. People are working from home. And I know that you've been working remote for most of your career. And you have a lot of interesting ideas. I think you're doing webinars right now on how to build a business if you need to, I guess. And I thought that would, yeah. So if you,
sure, man.
Yeah. So I guess to get started, did you want to say anything to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I'm here self-quarantining in Mexico. To my parents' delight, obviously they're super thrilled that we decided to stay, but figured here's a better place than any of these. I could sit out on my porch and let this problem go by. But we obviously got introduced through your current workplace and so the webinar that you mentioned, I kind of just threw it up as like a gauge the interest, see if people are curious. You know, I've always been an entrepreneurial person. I have worked in corporate jobs, but I always had like other things going on the side. I've always made my own money. Even when I was, you know, from the time I was 12, I never took an allowance. I was working two jobs when I was like 12 and 13, scraping together money so I could buy dumb shit. And, you know, so it's always kind of been that way. And so for me, I've been through this, not to this magnitude, but the a couple of economic downturns where there's a lot of challenges, especially in the marketing business that I'm in. People are quick to bounce out and stop spending money on marketing. That's like the first thing that gets pulled in terms of expense.
Yeah.
I created the webinar. I just kind of seeing who's interested. I think the current count is like 27 people for tonight, or I just saw like four more pop up. So yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of people are in it. A lot of people in the service industry who, you know how to do that one thing that they've been doing, but don't necessarily know about making money online or working remote. I've through my podcast and just through my work experience and through hiring all kinds of different people to do different things.
Yeah.
There's so many avenues, there's so many doors of things that you can open to make money online. And so, yeah, I just want to share some knowledge, share some wealth and contribute a little bit to solving the problem.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I signed up for the one on Thursday just to, it's always good to learn more. I guess kind of on that note, you're talking about, you know, working remotely. I guess we could jump in with that first, kind of talking about how people are currently working, and then maybe talk a little bit about if something goes wrong and people are worried. So a lot of people are losing, you know, either people are working from home or they're unable to continue doing their professional job, unfortunately.
Right.
And so a lot of people are definitely struggling right now and trying to make sure that they can make the most of it. So I thought we could kind of cover both, probably bounce around a bit. These tend to be pretty disorganized. I hope you don't mind.
No problem. Yeah. So, I mean, on the topic of remote work, you know, it's funny. There's a big group of online entrepreneurs that I, you know, part of it, a couple different communities. And a lot of us after, you know, people were making all these videos and posts and going on and on about the self-quarantine and working from home and how this is changing their life. And it's funny, you know, a bunch of us were like, we're 5 days in and nothing has changed. Like, we haven't changed the way we've done anything. It was like, oh, you're like not talking to people in person and talking to them on a video and talking through internet channels instead of person to person. I'm like, this is my life. This has been my life for 7 years. So, you know, for me, there's been no shift, no real transition, other than obviously a lot of businesses that aren't spending money on marketing right now. And so, you know, we have obviously take a hit there. But yeah, I mean, I think if you are somebody that is now forced to work from home, I guess a couple of like tips or some advice I can give is don't lose structure of your day, number one. So if you would have gotten up and left for work at a certain time, like go do something at that time. Don't take the extra time to sleep in. Like the second you, and I, so this is coming from, I also worked for 6 years in an office for an insurance company. So I've actually done both sides of this. But one thing I noticed, like to be productive, you need the routine. So don't break the routine. If you get up at seven to go work out and to then go like get on the train to go to work or whatever it is that, you know, however you get there, like get up and fill your time with shit. Don't sleep in. Sleeping in is like the number one killer.
Yeah.
You also have to pick an area of your house that's like off limits for any household activity. So I used to get myself into the habit all the time of like, you'd be home and you're like, you know, if I just throw that laundry in, that makes a lot of sense. And then you move the laundry in and then you start playing around with something else. And then the Xbox controller is there and you're like, damn it. You really have to like detach yourself from those activities completely and make sure that you have an area of your house where that's like, there's a boundary. You move all the fun shit out of the way and make sure there's no TV, make sure there's no game console, make sure there's no, just nothing. Just make a barren area where like, this is the work area.
Yeah.
Because it has implications on both sides. So what I mean by that is, you know, you might get distracted during the day and then that's not good for work, obviously. But on the other side of it, if you mix those two spaces too much, then at 8 p.m., while you're trying to relax, you have this, like, you see the laptop off in the distance, and you're like, you know, I really could get a couple more lines of code, or a couple more emails, a couple more things. Like, it's really hard to move away from it. So, like, that's why I say during the day, like, hide everything. And then when you're done, hide the computer shit. Like, move it all, put a blanket over it, whatever. But if I'll tell you, like, you know, the thing that triggered me is, so when I worked from home in, when I used to live on Yonge Street, right outside my bedroom, which was a glass door, there was like the lights of the router and stuff. So when I was laying in bed, if I was on my right side, I could see the router blinking and I was like, man, I should really get stuff done. And like it enforced this idea of that thing is calling, go do something with it.
Like work, work.
That just
keep accomplishing, keep pushing. Like, I actually noticed that myself recently, because for instance, like, you know, in Toronto, you're living in like a small condo, right? There's not a whole lot of separation. You don't have like a separate office, or at least most people don't have a full room for their office. So, we have like, you know, a desk that is like the work area. And then, you know, you might also be working off the couch or, wherever is convenient. And then, you know, at the end of the night, you know, it's currently 7 o'clock. I was working up until right before this call. And it's, you know, I don't think that there's like that. It's not easy to make that separation. So I guess I like the idea of like what you said is like hide it and actually like physically move it. I hadn't really thought of that. So maybe I'll start trying that.
I would just, honestly, even if you throw a blanket over it, as stupid as that looks, if you can't make visual contact with it, it doesn't call the same way that it does if you just like catch the little blue light blinking out of the corner of your eye and you're like, damn it, I should be doing something productive.
So with that, I'm curious, like when you mentioned the morning routine, so let's say, you know, you used to have like an hour or 2 hour commute. Would you get up and actually like leave the house and just like walk around the block, or would you go and exercise? Like what would you focus on, or would just be
I think so, like just if you take out the like physically being in transit somewhere, like what would you be doing on there? Would you be listening to a podcast? Would you be wishing you were working out? It depends on who you are. Like I either like to work out at 7 a.m. Or like 8 p.m. There's nothing in between. My brain gets into stuff and I'm like 12 hours on it. So if I like first wake up, I really want to work out. But as soon as I have like a coffee and start eating, then I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. And it won't be till like late. But replace it with stuff and like don't feel bad for like laying in bed or laying on the couch or sitting upside down on the floor with a podcast in. Because if you would have been doing that commute anyway, you would have been listening to the podcast or catching up on something that brings you joy or escapism, don't take that away. Don't just wake up and start doing stuff because it kind of breaks down the barrier of like, this is work time, this is my time. Because even if you're stuck in transit on a streetcar, if you would regularly be listening to content or music, like do that thing, whatever that thing is. Whether you go out for a walk or you just, you know, flip upside down on the bed, whatever it is physically, mentally, stay in that space. Whatever you use that for in your regular commute time or your regular, like do that thing.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Cause I guess it's like, it's a routine really. It kind of like kicks you into that same like mode as well, right? If you're like priming yourself by like listening to a podcast, you might as well do it the same way in the morning, regardless, I guess. Right. So then,
I was going to say, so I actually like, I won't work before I've laughed. I won't do it. Like some people meditate. I like to make sure I've like laughed my face off for 15 minutes. So like I go straight to comedy and like, while I'm getting ready, while I'm doing this, taking out the garbage, I just have my AirPods in and I'm listening to one of like three or four podcasts that are from comedians. Cause like if I don't laugh, my creative brain just doesn't start until I've laughed, and that's just my pattern. So I make sure I get that like 20 minutes of that in.
Okay. Selfish ask, but which podcast do you listen to?
What's your favorite? There's one called The Fighter and the Kid. That's really funny.
Okay.
Which is Brendan Schaub and Brian Callen. And then there's King and the Sting, which is Brendan Schaub and Theo Vaughn, which is a little bit dumber, but it's still funny. I also listen to the Bill Burt podcast. So it's Bill Burr and Burt Kreischer. And then I'm listening to now Burt Kreischer's individual one. Because the problem is the content doesn't come out fast enough for me to miss it because some of them are not that long.
Yeah.
So those are like the four I rotate between. But those four guys, I just find hilarious, and I just love sitting. I love feeling like I'm like sitting on the couch with them and like listening to them talk shit. Makes me feel like I could be a comedian, even though I probably couldn't.
It just comes so easily for them, right?
Like seems like it does, but there's so much work that goes. I've often played with the idea. I'm like slowly working on a small set, but it's like not going that well.
Yeah, I tried doing a 5-minute comedy set, and it just did not turn out at all. I got like three jokes, and then I was like, let's do something more productive. Cool. So then, if you're doing that, you've got your day to day. You've got your day kind of confined, and you've figured out your schedule. How do you? So I guess, like, do you find it difficult to keep focused during the day? Like, how do you avoid, like, I don't know, like goofing off and watching a YouTube video or cooking yourself lunch? I guess it's all comes down to that separation.
I think it kind of goes to that same keeping in that lane, keeping that trajectory. Yeah. Like if you would be at an office regularly and your lunch break wouldn't consist of turning on the Xbox, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because we all know how that like time suck. Well, maybe I'll just play like one more round of Call of Duty. Maybe just one more round for whatever it is, right? So it's really easy to get into that because that is the activity that you do to relax.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start dumping that in the middle of the day, it's very easy for your brain to be like, no, but we're relaxing now, right? Like that's what I do when we relax. It's the same thing with like, I drink non-alcoholic beer still, like I don't drink alcohol, but the like non-alcoholic beer, the taste signifies to my brain, it's time to chill out now.
Mm.
And so if I were to do that at like 11:30 in the morning, not because I wouldn't be getting drunk because it's non-alcoholic, but to do that practice in the middle of the day, my brain just starts going, oh, we're going to like chill out now. And you're like, no, we're going to keep doing things. But as soon as you start taking the actions that your brain would usually have in a relaxation or an escapism mode, it's very hard to move yourself back to right. productive activities because your brain automatically is like, it trick you, like it almost tricks it. It's like that sensory thing. It like literally tricks your brain into being like, we're gonna be calm and we're gonna take a break and we're gonna turn off now. And it's really hard to get that back when you like you take 30 minutes in the middle of the day to like do something that gets your brain completely detached or unfocused. It's really hard to go back to that. It's why the idea of like these alerts and these distractions are really poisonous, like these Slack notifications and even email is really, you know, poisonous to have on throughout the day.
Right.
Because it's like every time you read it, your brain starts thinking about something else, and it's very hard to get back to that thing. And mm-hmm. so especially if it's an action that you would use to completely detach from being productive, I highly recommend not playing with that.
Right. And I guess like at the same time, like if you keep that for your spare time, that's a great way to switch out of that work mode as well, which would be cool. So I'm going to try that. So then you're obviously managing people, running your own business. So I think this is a great, like, so this is something that I'm dealing with where, I'm kind of leading a team. So, you know, I'm used to people coming over, poking my shoulder, asking me questions at work. And it's hard. I found it's hard to replicate that. Especially like, you know, just in a one-off, like, I mean, I can contact people, I can ping them. But you know, it's not quite the same. I feel like it doesn't happen as frequently and there's a little bit less like serendipity going on there. How do you kind of replicate that? Or how do you deal with the lack of that?
Video calls every day.
Hmm. Okay.
Video is a must. Slack and email is fine to send mindless information, but it's just like that, the danger of like texting with a girlfriend, if you're like in a bad mood, like where it's like, you read something the wrong way or they interpret something wrong. Like language in that delivery method is challenging.
Right.
And if you don't use emojis and if you don't do all these things, like it's very easy for someone to be, and it depends on their state of mind. One day they're happy and you say, hey, you're an idiot. They're like, ha ha. And then the next day they're in a bad mood and say, hi, you idiot. And they're like, I can't believe that person said that. Like, so you know what right. I mean? Like it's so hard without the context in written. I just don't mess with it. So if it's like beginning of the day, what are we all working on? Where is this at? Where do people need support? Just going through that in a video call where you can like see the person's face, you can see their energy, you can see is this person like genuinely in that headspace or can I tell? Because in person you can tell. So you need to replicate what you can tell, and that's body language and tone and pitch, which is obviously why phone is better than, you know, text or Slack or email. That's like the step up. A video is a step up beyond that because you can, you know, I might be able to force a little bit of enthusiasm, but if I'm, you know, hunched over and I'm obviously distraught or bored or isn't disengaged, it's really easy to miss that on the phone. Whereas doing it via video, it's like very apparent.
Right. Yeah. No. Definitely. That makes sense. Okay. So video calling, and then how do you deal with status reports? I guess you just rely on people to just kind of fit in with that and to do it themselves aside from that.
I mean, I think if you think about it, so here's the challenge. People say, well, this remote thing is supposed to be super efficient. So they discount how much time and how many actual conversations and actual physical touch points happen in an office place. So in an office, if you guys would spend 20 or 30 minutes a day moving stuff along a whiteboard or moving your sticky notes, or like when those physical things are happening, that's you got to remember that's somebody being able to interpret visually what's happening.
Yeah.
So when you take that away and then just be like, oh, just be efficient on your like 10 minute video meeting, like they lose a lot of information. There's a lot of miscommunication there. So I would say, you know, even if you have to get on a video call multiple times a day with a shared whiteboard, with a shared Google Doc, or whatever that thing is, do it. Like spend the same amount of time planning and communicating online than you would do in person.
Yeah.
Because you're not in person, it actually makes it harder, not easier. So spending less time is actually really counterintuitive and can really open you up to misunderstandings and miscommunication and somebody working on something for 3 days and you being like, what the hell did you build that for? That stuff happens a lot.
Yeah.
You know? So I replicate it as close as you can in real life. And even if that's, you know, you put the camera on a board in your place and you move it along and you like let them do it. Do everything you would do in person online.
Yeah. I love that. That's interesting. Cause like, yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things I've noticed is, or at least like in software development, like a lot of people, you know, a lot of people like to get that whole like heads down, you know, I'm going to be like, I'm going to program for like 8 hours and they think of that as productivity. But then like a lot of the decision-making and like, you know, like an hour long meeting or like a half hour meeting or whatever, 20 minutes could basically remove the need for like half of that work versus, spending all that time. And then you kind of maybe spin your plates or burn yourself. Like you're just doing something unnecessarily. And like the rubber duckying thing, people always like to call it that when you explain a problem to somebody and then you come up with a solution yourself. And at the end of like the conversation, like they might not have even said anything, but it's like the fact that you're talking to a person, you wind up with a solution. And people joke that you can just talk to a rubber duck, but I really don't think it's the same.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
And so I think, a couple other recommendations based on that. So even in my in-person meetings, it's different in software. I mean, you're in a completely different space where it needs more thinking time and more this and this and that. But for me with marketing, it's like our maximum meeting is 15 minutes. So if it goes past 15 minutes, I am furious. I hate it. In fact, I just start tuning out. So going into meetings being like, hey, here's the people that need to be invited. Here's the objective. This is the one thing we're trying to solve in this 15-minute meeting. Then that way, because especially with online, multiple people, hey, can you hear me? Hey, my video's not turned on. Like, it's already distracting not being in person. So making sure you do like little sprints of meetings, being like, hey, our goal is to make sure that we know what everybody is going to work on today. Please consolidate everything that you're doing into like less than 3 minutes of conversation. And then that way, that's the benchmark. So then everyone comes on, you got 10 people on the screen or whatever, you know, 5 people on the screen and you're like, you got 2 minutes. So just be super efficient by having a goal of that meeting and then just have more meetings.
Yeah.
But like never more than 20 minutes, because unless you got to do a really big planning thing, I'm of the opinion that a lot of it just goes into like ego and bullshit. If you know you're like, I got 15 minutes to make a decision, your brain turns on and you're going to make the best judgment and the most efficient. This is what my gut is saying, and this is what I know based on all the facts, rather than second guessing and then arguing because it's like, it's what Shane said and I don't like Shane, so of course I'm going to argue with Shane. Right. If I only have 15 minutes, I'm not going to waste my time doing that bullshit. I'm just going to like get to what needs to get happening and then just do more meetings.
Actually, that's a great point, because when I said like I started off at an hour and then had to cut it down to 30 and then said like, I think software development is very much the same actually. Like we do 15 minute stand-ups, for instance, in the morning. And if you go past that, like some stand-ups will be like half an hour to an hour in huge teams. And it's honestly just like stuff that doesn't really need to be discussed in that meeting. Yeah. So actually that's a great point. I like the idea of like just making that, like that's a benchmark, and then you can make more meetings. And so you can actually make more decisions over time versus kind of drawing it out and then making just one decision.
Right. And look, if you've got a Zoom account, then you already have a meeting room. So everyone paste that link on their browser, and then when the meeting pops, or it's in the calendar, but it's the same link every time. You just click it and then all of a sudden everybody's in it. Hey, now you two leave because I gotta talk to these guys about something. Great. These two drop off, you finish your conversation. Like, it's so easy with a product like Zoom, where you've got the same link every time. Everyone can dive into the same thing. It's got great functionality. It's got recording. It's got whiteboarding. It's got document sharing. It's got chat. I mean, it's just such a great product overall that there's not much you can't do with it.
I didn't know that whiteboarding. Okay. That's cool. I'll have to look into that. Okay, cool. Yeah, no, that's great. Like, we've actually started doing Discord to kind of mimic that like kind of like one-off kind of bumping someone's shoulder. We haven't really used it a lot, but I'm kind of excited to see how that works, because it's kind of like you log in when you're just not super busy, and then someone can just kind of tap you on the shoulder by like joining your chat. Right. So might be interesting. We'll see. Yes. So I was also kind of interested, I don't know if you deal with this, but the social isolation part of it is a little bit like, some people just kind of, you know, I think there's like introverts and folks that like really do enjoy just having their downtime. But even like, I consider myself somewhat of an introvert, but a bit more like, I like to be a bit more outgoing, and then I get like tired, and then I want to spend my time alone. But as I'm like at home, I'm noticing I'm going stir crazy. Like I really want to just go out and meet people, and I'm like, oh wait, no, social distancing. So how do you have any like methods of dealing with that, or?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's the video calling thing.
Yeah.
I'm in a Zoom video meeting or a FaceTime video meeting,
mm-hmm.
a minimum of 4 times a day, up to 10 times a day.
Okay.
Back if I got back to back. So, it's the best way to mimic it is like when you can see the person, you can like, you feel like, you know, you're not in the room, but it's so different than a phone or a text. So I just always go like, even just going straight to FaceTime video or WhatsApp video or Facebook video. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm pretty much making all my phone calls now. I'm barely dialing the phone anymore to add that extra layer. Again, for me, because I'm videoing with clients so much, like I'm always in front of somebody.
Right.
I have seen some people playing like you can play all these different games and activities online now, like Catan and virtual like dinners that people are doing. So I mean, there's
true.
Stuff. For yeah. me, I just I'm just so used to interacting via video that it doesn't faze me that much. And I okay. like quiet time.
Yeah, I guess it's like it's almost like, you know, you just build the muscles to actually be able to do this. Then it seems like it kind of just comes over time.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, that kind of covers all the questions I really had. I mean, yeah, managing a team. In terms of like, so I guess I know that you have a cutoff, so I don't want to go too far on your time. But maybe like we could kind of jump into like, so I mean, obviously working from home is great if you can. But unfortunately, a lot of people's, you know, livelihood has been affected by the whole situation. So I'm curious. What would be like, let's say a software developer, or like, we'll start with software developers because it's what my target audience is, has just say like they got laid off or something happened. And so now they're trying to either, they're trying to diversify their risk because they're worried about it, or they're trying to, you know, get something going while, you know, the job market might be on a decline. They can't necessarily find a remote job as easily as they would like. What would you recommend they do right off the bat? Like, what were the quick, easy wins that you think somebody should just start with?
So I think with a software developer, because you already have just strong base skill, it puts you at a big advantage. You know, so I'm doing 2 webinars this week. Again, it was an impromptu thing. All of a sudden there was like 40 people signed up, and I was like, shit, I better turn this into a proper thing. And so I really spent the time hashing out all these ideas. But honestly, for software, like, there are so many businesses that could survive this if they had proper use of technology. So what I would do is I would reach out to all the fitness people, all the entertainment people, all the cooking people who want to offer hey, pay $40 and come cook with us, or pay me $100 a week and you can join my yoga classes online. Like, they don't know how to set the shit up, and it's really easy, but it's intimidating to people that aren't used to being in technology.
Right.
So you got to remember, like, so my trainer, for example, he's been a bodybuilder, power lifter, like super, and he's been in the army, like yoga, and he knows how to work out.
Yeah.
But like right now, he's running around in circles in his studio hoping for the best. I'm thinking, wait, like, if you were to just call even just your existing client and say, hey, why don't I cut your membership down to like 30%, but twice a week, I'll give you fucking a video workout that we'll do live in your house. I'll watch your form. I'll give you the feedback. I'll give you the critique. Like, why not?
Yeah.
they're like personal trainers who just don't know how to do it. And they're like, wait, do I just join one of these platforms and then hope people come and take my, like, just build some shit for them. Build them a basic website with like access to like Zoom video calling and be done with it. You know, like tiny landing page, payment infrastructure, a little bit of automation, done, build it.
Yeah, you could, and then like, go low tech for whatever you can, like if you could do Zoom, why build Zoom, right? Because I think that's where a lot of developers get stuck, is we think we have to build the entire system. Fancy.
No, man. Like I know a guy whose entire job, so this guy charges between $5,000 and $7,000 to do business automation. And it's like basic shit, like make sure there's a contact form. And when that contact form comes in, it goes in active campaign. And then active campaign makes sure this message goes out. And then it goes into this bucket of this. And it gets tagged with the, like, basic shit. People don't understand it. They have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, so you could make, you know, $1,000. Like, you could charge a personal trainer $1,000 to set this up. Mm. And it's, what, 3 hours out of your day? Here's what I would say for software guys. So I know you want to be fancy. I know you want to build the next big thing. Stop. Don't do that. Figure out the industry that you can service quickly and easily. Make a repeatable process. And then just message every single one of them. Like if you can create one process and repeat it. So here it is, right? So like for fitness guys, or say somebody that's regularly a chef. And they have a huge list of everybody that's ever come to their restaurant, thousands of people in their database, people that have booked online, people that have signed up for promotional offers. Do you know how fucking easy it would be for a chef to be like, hey, you and your family are stuck in at home. I'm going to charge $20 and you can join me and like learn how to cook this thing. I'll send you the ingredients ahead of time. You'll watch me in my kitchen and you'll do this step by step at home. It's entertainment. So like if they don't know how to do that, you just literally reach out to every chef that's got their restaurant closed right now that isn't doing delivery and be like, hey, for $1,000, I'll build this infrastructure for you.
Yeah.
Then just reach out to like 1,000 of them. Mm. And even if you get 2 or 3 a month, that's $3,000 a month. For what? A couple hours of your time. Like people are willing to pay for a solution. And especially when they're like we're kind of in it now. So fitness guys, cooking guys, painting instructors, art people, people that can entertain people's kids. All that.
That's amazing. I like that because like it doesn't just affect the software guys. It's actually like this is how, you know, software developers or like, you know, technical people in general, like I think a product manager or a designer, anyone who's in the tech space is probably capable of doing a lot of these things on their own. And they can enable people to kind of survive this. Because, I mean, Ontario just announced, like, that all non-essential businesses need to shut their doors. Yeah. And, like, that's going to be huge. And I think you're, like, making an amazing point. It's, like, you need to be able to adapt. And I think the people that are, like, the people who are going to adapt now are going to be the ones that thrive, I guess. Right.
And here's the truth of it. It's, like, People don't understand the simplicity of business in a lot of instances. Like creating a new software where it's like, I got to build it and I got to get users and then I got to generate revenue and I got to do this and I got to do this. But like, if there's an opportunity now and like maybe the chefs really enjoy it and maybe they already have a list, maybe they just don't know what to do with these people. So if I'm someone that owns a restaurant and I have 2,000 emails, like create an e-blast in MailChimp and be like, hey, are you bored? Are you stuck at home? Do you want to do remote cooking classes? And maybe even after this thing's all done, they're like, they still really like it. And there's other ways you can support them. And if you can get $1,000 or $2,000 to set this up, how many contracts do you need in a month to be happy? Three contracts at $2,000 is $6,000 a month in revenue.
So you just replaced your income basically. And then.
Right. I mean, it's all there. It's all doable, right? And so I think it's like keeping it simple, finding something that's easily repeatable. Those are my two biggest things.
Yeah.
So like even before, so I actually got asked by a contractor once, hey, could you make me like a little one page website? I can't find anybody that will do it that won't charge me a crazy amount. I was like, if I did it for like $2,000, would you be happy? And they're like, yeah, I'd be thrilled if I had like a one page website that showcased my information, had a couple of galleries, had some testimonials, had my services on it. I'd love to do that. And then he's like, if you did that, like I could introduce you to like 1,000 other people in the trade that would love to pay $2,000 because they would all love a website. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, you get template A, B, or C, or template A or B. Your content goes in, you get one round of edits, and that's it.
Yeah.
You can build that shit in an afternoon. And so, you know, servicing like areas of people where it's like low hanging fruit, low ticket, is super, super profitable. It's just getting in front of them and getting that outreach. And you can literally pick up the phone, you can Instagram DM, you can Instagram video message, you can hit them up on LinkedIn, you could email them through their website, you can text them, you can WhatsApp them, you can hit their Facebook page up, have a template that's already built and be like, hey, I'd love, you know, I built this template, it's specific for roofers or this or for that. I'm selling them because I built the template for the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm selling them for $2,000 a pop. If you get a hold of, if you reach out to 1,000 of them, there's no way you can't land 10 to 15 websites. And then it's $30,000. And then half of your year is taken care of. Like it's just taking action. But right. I think something simple and replicatable and then just doing a shitload of outreach.
Yeah. That's amazing. I think that's great. And I like that my next question was going to be like, how would you recommend going about the outreach? But, you covered it right there. Just reach out. If you were contacting one of these people, like, I guess, let's say, you know, you're a software engineer or whatever, you're a little bit of a, let's say not as socially adept, like, you're not a salesperson. You're not like used to this. You're a little bit worried about that. I feel like that's a lot of people's like kind of fear around that.
Yep.
What would be like the kind of like a little like baseline kind of template for like, what would you say?
So, okay. Two things about it. One is know the numbers. So your baseline numbers look like this. If you reach out to 100 people, 10 will give you the time of day.
Okay.
And if you get 10 to send a proposal and pitch the product, one out of every 10 will say yes. Mm. So know that you need to reach out to 100 to get one sale. Mm-hmm. So keeping in mind that every no or every stop emailing me or every leave me alone is one step closer to that 1 in 100. Mm. That's where your mindset needs to be.
Yeah.
So if your mindset is not there and it's like every no I get, I'm like, oh my God, I suck. I'm never going to be able to do this. You're already screwed. So 1 in 100, remember that. Are you streaming? Okay. That's number one. And then the second piece is reach out and say, hey, came across you here. I made X. I think it would really enhance your business. Would love to show you what it looks like. Let me know. That's it. Don't write paragraphs, just basic, right? If it's something that's going to improve my business or enhance my online presence or whatever it is, just be direct, be simple about it. Now you can also, if you want to go the extra mile, hey, came across you on Homestars or Yelp. Looks like you've got a lot of great reviews. It seems like people really like your service. Mm-hmm. I took a look at your website. I think it's a little bit slow and a little bit old. I actually built this template out for your industry. I'd love to show you what it looks like and see if it might be a good fit for you. That's it.
That's awesome. That's simple. Like that's the key, I guess.
Simple, brother. That's it. People don't like complicated. I get, as a business owner, I get 100 emails a week just from useless shit, pitching me stuff I don't need and telling me it in a way that everybody writes it. Everybody writes the same thing. You know, everyone from India says greetings on the day. Do you need SEO? Here's a list of 400 services available. Like it's all the same shit. Nobody's being creative. You want to be creative? Go follow them on Instagram and send them a video message being like, hey, came across your thing. It's exact same stuff you'd write in the email, but record a video to your face, to them. And then they're like, oh, like that's a personal touch that people don't get. They're not expecting it. You know how many more people will say yes out of that 100? A lot. So I'm just saying, if you're just doing the like, I'm just going to email a bunch of people away, then one in every 100, but like, you should be able to get 3 or 4 out of every 100. If you were to send 100 people a video message being like, hey, looked like I found you on Yelp. Looks like you got a cool business. Your website's kind of slow. Would love to show you a template that I built. It's super affordable and it's really easy to switch over. You in? You're closing 4 to 5 out of 100, guaranteed. Yeah. You just got to do it, and you have to know that you need to reach out to those 100 people to get the one sale. And if then anything beyond one is a bonus.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. So I think we're about at time here. Want to make sure that you have time to get prepared and get to your webinar. Are your webinars all full? Like, I'm just curious if there's any way I can point people to you, your resources.
Pop onto the website mikemall.to, or find me on LinkedIn or Instagram, Mike Mall. I have a feeling we're going to be doing more of these just based on the response. I only have the one today and Wednesday planned, but I think it's going to help some people. And so I feel like we're going to probably start doing at least one a week. If you point people over to that, then we'll see where they're going up. But I'll keep the social media and the website updated with what we're doing.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. I'll definitely post that in the show notes and everything. Cool. I'm sure a lot of people will be joining, so I hope you don't get overflowed. I know you're already like filling up these things. Like it's good. Everyone wants to know this stuff. Like it's
yeah, man. Yeah, more the merrier. As many as Zoom will take, I will take.
Awesome.